Grace to you and peace from God who creates and redeems and sustains all things. Amen. Our gospel story from the Gospel of John is a familiar one to all of us. The feeding of the 5,000, it even has its own title. But John treats us to a slightly different understanding of this story. Jesus has traveled again to the other side of the Sea of Galilee, the Sea of Tiberias. And as in the Markan Gospel that we had last week, the crowd just keeps following him. No matter where he goes, he is pursued. And finally, he goes up to a mountain with his disciples and sits there, and suddenly the crowd is again around them. Jesus sees them coming up the mountain, and in the Gospel of John, takes this moment to test, it says in our Gospel, to test the disciples, starting with Philip. And he says to him, having looked at the crowds, "How are we to buy bread for all of these people?" Not unpredictably, Philip looks at it from a very practical point of view, and you could almost feel the panic beginning to set in. He says to Jesus, 6 months' wages would not be able to buy enough bread for these people. Already, the fear sets in. But Simon says, "Look, there is a boy here who has fish and bread." So, a little difference in John's Gospel is that in John's Gospel, the fish is dried fish. It's not, as in the Synoptic Gospels, the word ichthys, it's sarpion. It's dried fish. And the bread is not just bread. It is particularly, in this case, barley loaves. Both generally accepted as the food of the poor. And so the story plays out very much like we're used to. The bread gets distributed. The fish gets distributed. People eat as much as they want. But there's a difference. Jesus doesn't break the loaves and give them to the disciples as a kind of Eucharistic moment. In fact, in this gospel, it says that Jesus himself distributes the bread and the fish. The disciples seem almost left out in their fear. And so they gather up. At the end of the meal, everything gets gathered up, put into the bag, into the baskets, 12 baskets full, just like in all the other Gospels. And then Jesus wants to take the disciples off to another place, because suddenly the people, having received this gift, want to make Jesus king. But he's having none of it. And so he tries to escape to a mountain, tries to go back across the water to a place where they can be alone, away from the danger of being made a king. And when evening came, and again keep in mind the importance of darkness and light in the Gospel of John, when evening came, they went back down to the sea and started to cross the sea, and the wind began to blow. And they see Jesus walking on the sea. And they were again terrified. That language of fear. And Jesus said something to them that this, I think, makes the whole story. He says, "It is I. Do not be afraid." It is I. Do not be afraid. So these two stories, which are often treated separately, at least in this particular year, are thrown together. They follow one right after the other. And I began to wonder how they were tied. And for me, the way they are tied is that each finds its root in fear. For the disciples, for those maybe even who were walking up the hill, the fear that there might not be enough. Where will we eat? What will we do? I have to admit that when we travel, one of the first things I worry about is whether or not I will be able to figure out how to order lunch, or where I will go, or what if I order the wrong thing, or what if there isn't any place to eat. The fear is a common one, and in fact, I would say that over the last year and a half, fear has driven a lot of our life. Fear of getting sick, fear of losing our jobs. I will admit I have a fear about whether or not we will ever have anyone back in this church again. Fear rules us in so many ways, and I think sneaks its way into our very existence. So much so that we may not even see the ways that fear is changing us. Although it has been true for a very long time, certainly within the political realm, fear has become the primary weapon of change. Recently in Texas, a bill was introduced to make sure that no one could ever get an abortion again. And having been thwarted by the legal process, this new law will now allow anyone from any state to sue anyone who has or assists or counsels or enables anyone to exercise their federal right of determination over their own body. The point of the legislation is, of course, to induce fear. Now, most legal experts agree that no suit will ever be won. If someone from North Dakota sues someone in Texas for helping someone or providing money or transporting someone to have an abortion, they don't have a self-interest. But the point of the whole law is to induce fear into anyone that they could be sued 1,000 times for the same act over and over and over and over again. Now, the issue itself around a woman's right to control her own body is a really important one. But just as important is that we are moving into a new era where if we cannot legislate what we want, then we will create such an atmosphere of fear that we will control one another that way. It's one example of thousands of ways that we are finding ourselves controlled by fear. In our first lesson for today, in that story about David, David wants what he wants. And David will go to any length that he can to get what he wants, even to the point of sacrificing Uriah the Hittite. Are our own desires and needs so important, so compelling, that we would evoke all around the world this sense of abject, near terror to get what we want, regardless of the human and spiritual cost. What Jesus tells the disciples, "Fear not, I am near," is certainly what we ourselves need to hear. Jesus' antidote to the fear which we are developing and instilling in one another is to remind us again and again that at the core of who we are is Christ, who calls us to peace and to love. What road will we want to take in the future? Will we continue to use fear as the weapon that we draw out of its sheath to get our own way in a David-like moment of life? Or will we listen to the voice of one who comes to us in wave and water, in wine and in bread, who calls us with the gentle voice of a shepherd and the shout of a loving God, to be remade in God's image and put away fear not only for ourselves, but to withdraw it as a weapon against others. For we will never feed anyone as long as we remain in fear of having enough. We will never give away the love of God as long as we cling to it so tightly and claim it for our own that we cannot let it go from our grasp. We will never unfold the kingdom in partnership with God as long as we call it our own. It is only in the opening of our hands and our hearts in the assurance of God's love that we can begin to become who God is calling us to be. Not people of fear, but people who receive bread and fish and wine and hope at the hands and from the very hands of Jesus. If we are to remake our world, if we are to reform our lives, may it begin knowing the full and loving presence of Christ, who calls us back into the world, not that we might be afraid, but that we might boldly know whose we are, God's children. Amen. Our worship continues with the hymn of the day, "Jesus' Priceless Treasure," ELW number 775.